Hey, good morning. It's Patricia Murphy. It's Friday. This is Seattle Now. This week, Mayor Bruce Harrell unveiled a new budget that doubles down on policing. A new study determined a lot of people love Seattle and that a lot of people hate it, too. And the Kraken is getting ready to introduce a new mascot. We'll break it all down with podcaster Eula Scott Bino and TBTL's Andrew Walsh in a minute. But first, let's get you caught up. If you're waiting for fall sweater weather, you might have to wait a little longer. National Weather Service says this early stretch of October might be the hottest in 30 years. Expect temperatures at or near 80 degrees this weekend. The heat is expected to last until at least Tuesday, when things cool down just a bit, but not much. Bad news for the southern resident orcas. The Center for Whale Research says their numbers are the lowest in more than 40 years. The Seattle Times reports the L pod currently has 32 orcas, its lowest point since the study began in 1976. The other two pods, K and J, have 16 and 25 whales, respectively. Three whales, including one from the L pod, have died between last summer and this summer, and another L whale hasn't been seen at all in 2022. And almost live fans, the beloved Seattle comedy show is coming back on Roku, Amazon Fire, and King 5 streaming apps. Starting tomorrow, shows from the 15th and final season will be released weekly. Almost Live features Bill Nye before he was the science guy and Joel McHale before Talk Soup and Community. It's the end of another week. We finally got a bit of rain. Mackenzie Scott filed for divorce, and the Mariners are inching closer to the playoffs. And, devoted Casual Friday listeners, tonight is the night. At 7 p.m., you can come to Casual Friday Live at Town Hall, Seattle. Casual Friday regulars Ton Vinn and Geraldine DeReuter will be there. You don't want to miss it. Find a link to buy tickets in the show notes. All right, on to the show. Eula Scott Bino's here. She's a podcaster and longtime Central District resident and advocate. Hey, Eula, glad you're here.
Hello, me too.
Andrew Walsh is here as well. He's the co-host of the podcast TBTL, Too Beautiful to Live. Hey, Andrew, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Bruce Harrell unveiled his first biennial budget this week. And if there's one clear message we can get from it, Seattle is definitely funding the police. Harrell added $20 million to SPD's budget, a step away from the budget cuts that followed the summer protests in 2020. In his announcement, the mayor said public safety was core to the city's charter. He remarked on the short-term success of emphasis patrols. This budget falls very much in line with the promises that Harrell made during his campaign to address public safety concerns with more policing. Eula, I want to start with you. Voters elected Harrell on this strong public safety message, and this budget proposal definitely seems to deliver that.
I don't really know, Trish. I feel like $20 million to police means there will be some officers that are really able to make ends meet left and right in their, you know, in their outside King County residents. And I think that people who live in the city really won't see a lot of changes as a result of $20 million in their pockets. I think that a lot of folks are really trying to figure out how to feel safer with the packages that are delivered to their doors, going to the parks that have lots of homeless folks. I think people are looking for the safety of the streets being a lot more cleared off. And I honestly can't say that that's going to make a difference having more officers. I wonder if anything, it'll just add more people to the scene, meaning there will still be homeless people, but now there will be police officers more often too. You will still have your packages stolen, but you'll just see more cops on the road, you know?
That $20 million that's going back into policing comes from putting parking enforcement back under the control of SPD. Remember when that happened, you two? After the protests, parking enforcement got removed from SPD control and moved to the Seattle Department of Transportation. It had its own paperwork debacle that cost the city tons of money, but largely, the things that were put in place during 2020, even if they were symbolic, are back to where they were before. Andrew, I wonder what happened to all the things that people were talking about in 2020. There was a lot of kinetic energy going on.
Yeah, I'm with Eula. It's pretty disheartening, I think. You mentioned about that move from for the parking enforcement officers going back to the SPD. I spent a good deal of time yesterday trying to figure out like kind of the pros and cons of that. And it seems like even when they made that move of moving enforcement out of the SPD, it was a little bit symbolic, or mostly symbolic. But symbols sometimes are important. And also sometimes they're a first step as well. And this comes on the heels of, I think, this spring, right? The Washington State Legislature rolling back a lot of the reform measures that they had passed in the wake of George Floyd's murder and the protests that came from that. And so it just seems like we have this reputation for being a very progressive city, but we keep electing cop mayors and we give a lot of power to the police chief. And I feel like there is obviously crime in the city. Can't deny that. But there are measures of crime and there are measures of the fear of crime. Mm. And I feel like a lot of people, especially those who are lucky enough to have roofs over their head in the city, feel like they are victims when they're not really being victimized. I mean, some are. I don't want to say that public safety is not important. It is. But a lot of people are walking around their neighborhoods looking at the evidence of poverty and then saying they feel unsafe. And just because you feel unsafe doesn't mean you're unsafe.
Yes. I mean, when you said we have cop mayors, I thought like scaredy cat mayors. Like, we hire these scaredy cats that are like, I'm afraid of everything, so we all need to get more, like, locks for our doors. And it's like, we need someone who's a hero. Like, we need someone who's willing to come in and be like, I'm afraid of nothing. I'm going to go down there and talk to those people, engage with them, and I'm going to help them, you know, the way, like, a hero does.
There is $10 million in there for the King County Regional Homelessness Authority and more money for affordable housing as well. You know, Andrew, budgets reflect the values and priorities for a city, right? What do you think this budget says about Seattle?
Well, before I go broad, I guess I'll mention one more specific thing that I was reading about in the Stranger yesterday that I found, again, kind of disheartening, which is while we're having this conversation about, you know, seeing a budget increase back in the SPD that we've talked about, there was also something I think as council members are looking more closely at this budget, they saw that human service providers, the type of people who are on the front lines of working with people who are homeless or distressed in some other way, without getting too wonky here, there was a law that tied their salary increases to inflation, which, of course, inflation is very out of control right now. And this budget would pull back on that, would actually cap it at a 4% increase when inflation is something like 8.2. What does that say? What does that say about our priorities? Like, we're talking about the fact that we don't deny that there is crime and that there is a role for law enforcement. But to me, the big fundamental thing that we were talking about when people were out in the streets protesting was that cops don't have to do everything. Let's empower other sectors of the government and of the economy to take over, to do the jobs that cops shouldn't have to do. And when we devalue the human service providers by capping their potential earning power, but then we're giving police officers these signing bonuses because we see that as a crisis, I think that answers the question of where our priorities are.
Yeah, I would say the budget says we got money. We got a lot of people paying lots of taxes. I mean, me and Andrew pay taxes over here.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Well, to your point, Andrew, the Stranger reports that budget chair Teresa Mosqueda raised concerns about that measure that would cut pay for shelter workers and case managers and human service providers. That is a long way of saying right now that there are many opinions before this budget becomes final. And we are just at the beginning here.
Can I just jump in here quickly to apologize? This is supposed to be Casual Friday, and I feel like I'm keeping it anything but casual here, guys. I'm sorry.
Life and times in the Emerald City are not necessarily casual, Andrew. You know, these are the real things, you know? Everybody's got an opinion on everything. Speaking of opinions, a new survey about Seattle this week says when it comes to the Emerald City, you either love it or hate it. A market research firm surveyed 1,000 adults and found Seattle was in the top 10 for both most desirable and least desirable places to live. So not much in between there, love us or hate us. Maybe it's our national rep as a progressive city or ground zero for Antifa, depending on who you're listening to. Maybe it was our pandemic response, the George Floyd protests, or the chop. Yula, what makes this city great?
Everything. Honestly, everything you just said to me is why I live. I want to be here. You know, I want to be here because we claim to be progressive. I want to be here because we strive for progress and we want to have a civil union amongst each other. You know, I tell people, Seattle, you know, we're talkers. We're, you know, elite thinkers. We sit around and we really contemplate on things. And that's what our society is built around. This bad weather means you have more time to like drink coffee and you know, philosophize on things. And then my next thought is, if the people who will put us on the bad list are the, you know, the ones who get here and are violent with trans folks on the Hill, if they're the ones that get here and they have aggressive complaints about, you know, the kids from Garfield kind of spreading out in the neighborhood during lunch, like, I like the idea that they don't like it. I hope they go home. I don't want them to not take some of their values with them. I mean, take some of our values with them, but they can go. But I always, you know, want to come back to, this is a really big country and we're all really different and we all have things to learn from each other. So as much as I wish that our lens on CHOP and on social justice would spread their direction, meaning just the world as a whole and the country, I wish Seattle would get, you know, a little more wrapped around manners like the South. And I wish they would get a little bit more wrapped around family like the East Coast. And I wish we got a little bit more wrapped around, you know, land and contributing and to, you know, I should say not land, but farming. I wish we got wrapped around more to farming like the Midwest. So, you know, I think there are pluses to everywhere. Do I want to live in the Midwest, the East Coast, or the South? No.
I love Seattle. I moved here in 2009, moved away for a little bit and came back. This is the only city I've ever moved back to. I absolutely love this city. So when I, you know, bring up complaints with the current mayor's budget or what have you, these are the conversations that we have, and these are the conversations that can continue to make the city great. I have a perspective on this, having grown up in Cleveland, Ohio. Well, first of all, go ahead, make your Cleveland joke. Every city's great comparatively, right? But I went back to Cleveland a few months back, and I got to see a whole bunch of family. And I'll just say that the majority of my family, you know, the older generation, they all are glued to Fox News most of the time. And we just recently bought a house in North Seattle that is a humble abode. But obviously, as you know, if you live in Seattle, really took a lot for us to buy, right? And it was interesting to have all these conversations with aunts and uncles and whatnot who would, when they would say, like, how are things in Seattle? And they'd have this look of concern on their face, right? But in the same conversation, we're talking about how hard it is to buy a house here because it's such an attractive, beautiful place to live in many ways.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. I mean, honestly, when you say, like, a hellhole, I look out the window and I'm like, okay, all I see are mountains, trees. I can see, you know, I can barely see the water from my home. So my point is, you know, it's a beautiful place, this peninsula we're on.
Yeah.
You know, it's really sacred land, it feels like. And I get how people might not feel that way before they get here. It might feel like it's one of those, you know, it's almost like when you read Batman, you're like, yeah, well, I would never move to Gotham City. They have lots of problems, lots and lots of problems. But then if you visited Gotham City and it looked like Seattle, you'd be like, yeah, I think there's a place for me here.
That's a good point, Yula, because the survey did not ask respondents why they chose these cities, right, to love or hate.
They didn't even put Gotham on the list, which is another huge oversight.
No. Trifling.
Would you move here today? Mm-hmm. Because we've all lived here for many, many years at this point. We have seen the change in the city slowly over time, right? I wonder if I pulled up here today, I would have the same opinion. I'd like to think I would because I do love Seattle so much, but who knows? Who knows? It's a harder place to live than when I moved here.
Well, like I just mentioned, we chose to settle down here just recently, and that was a big decision for us. I never chose to settle down anywhere before. And yes, I'm more attracted to the city now than ever before because of the public transportation options. I mean, it's been huge in my life. And with the bikes, like, we live now further away from the train than we used to, but the ability to get to the train with the last mile problem sort of being taken care of by these bike share services, and the buses have gotten better, the trains have gotten better, the city's getting better.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And I mean, I would move here every day. I mean, for me, it's about the community and the culture of it all. You know, being around people who are comfortable with conversation of progress is really valuable to me. You know, I've lived in Boston, I've lived in California, or in LA, I should say. And in both of those spaces, when you bring up progress, people often can't wrap their minds around the big picture of like abolishing the police versus just, you know, being able to have more leisure with their expression of drug use or with the cost of living in the city. For me, it's really about trying to meet whole people and get people to where they feel whole as well. And I think Seattle has the right lens on that. You know, we have such a progressive city and culture around critical race theory, around bias, around fat phobia. It's just where I want to be with around smart thinkers who are thinking about how to make this place better for kids. And I guess that's a big part of that, too, is because I am a parent, right? Like having small people, you really think, where am I taking you to be to be wrapped up in the culture of some space? And a lot of spaces, the culture really is just capitalism. I think about Boston, and I loved Boston, and there's such a great culture of art there, but there's not a culture of community building. And I would rather start with this foundation for my child and move on to the other pluses around the world.
Cities are always changing, but the changes in Seattle since the pandemic have been dramatic, as we've been talking about. So many beloved businesses have closed. Many are still struggling right now. And one of the biggest and most recent announcements is in the Chinatown International District. I'm talking about the Viet Hoa grocery store. Owners announced this week they're closing tonight. Here's the owner's daughter, Li Ching Tran, in 2019, describing the significance of the store.
My parents actually own this Viet Hoa supermarket. They started the company Viet Hoa in 1981. So my parents were born and raised in Vietnam, and they escaped after the war, and they both ended up in Seattle. And they got married here, had my brothers and I all here in Seattle, and I was born and raised here. Honestly, I don't have any memories from before this store existed. You know, I tell people this store is kind of like my fifth sibling. It's just been a part of my life growing up. We would come here on the weekends. I remember, you know, bagging groceries as a kid, or I'd help my mom count the tills at the end of the day when we're closing up the store. So it was very much, you know, part of my life. It always has been, probably always will be.
You know, Eula, this store has been open in this location for nearly 41 years. And, you know, there's other markets in the ID. But what do we lose when places like this go away?
You know, memories is what I really think of. You know, it's funny, I got teary-eyed just hearing her say that, because I'm like, oh my God, what her whole experience, right? And we lose the opportunity to have something happen over and over again in terms of the deja vu of when you've been someplace so long, and you go with yourself, and then you go with another friend, and then you take, you know, you went with your grandparents, and now you're going with your grandchildren. So that's, you know, the hard part, but also the opportunity to go into a space that has real ties to a culture. Yeah. You know, those people, like her saying they escaped and they both landed here, means that they fully brought on their culture.
That's really fascinating, Eula. My hope is that we just still have room in our culture and in our city and in our country and in our culture for more people to use spaces like that to make a go of it. This is a sad story, but I know that the family also has markets in Renton, I believe, and some other places. And I hope that they continue to enjoy success beyond this in various ways. But what would be really heartbreaking is if these old school places imbued with culture keep going away, and we only replace them with kind of generic big corporations coming in and taking their place. As long as we can continue to keep spaces for people to have this story. And my worry is we're seeing less and less of those opportunities, but let's focus on that.
You know, I think that's an interesting point, Andrew, because what this really brings me back to is the larger question of who is and what is Seattle post-pandemic? Who are we? Because this store is not alone, right? The loss of this store is the loss of a lot of stores in this city. The boards are up. You know, we're trying to bring people back in, but the landscape is so much different than it was 2 years ago. So I wonder if all of this separation, all of this masking, all of this 6-foot distance has really depersonalized us in some ways and left less room for these kinds of cultural centers and important places. When I got sad when I looked in at the video of Viet Hoa because I've never been in there, but it screamed 1980s grocery store to me in a nostalgic way that I felt very deeply. And I actually felt the loss of the dumb Acme supermarket that busted up in the 80s back in Clifton, New Jersey all those years ago, right? So, yeah, these are bittersweet moments for our cities.
What I wish is, I wish, Trish, that like the Historical Society of Seattle would go out and start putting markers up before people have the right to do the other thing way around. You know what I mean? I wish that Seattle would walk around and say, this has been here so long. Let's just say it's historic. Let's say that we can buy, you know, if this person ever wants to sell out, they could sell out to us and we could, you know, make sure that this space stays put. Because the amount of change that's happening as like a born and raised second generation Seattleite, like my people have been here since the 40s. Honestly, so much change happens that I'm like, I don't even know what's going on half the time. Like I drive down the street and I can't take that left anymore. And then I don't know what's going on that street. And then the next time I do, I'm like, am I in the right place? It's like it's giving me vertigo. Mm.
One last thing before we go. Joining our local luminaries of Sammy the Sounder, Mariner Moose, Doppler the Storm mascot, and Dubs the Husky, the Seattle Kraken will be unveiling a new mascot this weekend. Andrew, let's say you're on the hiring committee for this new mascot. What do you think are the key skills an applicant needs to have?
You threw me for a loop there because I thought the question was going to be, is Seattle going to do this right? And I just want to say, again, I love this city. I love this city with my entire heart and soul. But they're going to screw this up so badly. This is not what Seattle does well. It just isn't. We're not going to get a good gritty out of this. I mean, it's one of the reasons we have Macklemore playing during the seventh inning stretch. Don't get me started on that again. You know, like, I think it. I'll give him credit for Doppler. I think Doppler is a fantastic name for a mascot for a team called the Storm. I'll give him credit for that. As far as what skills are required for this, I mean, I guess be lovable. I just like avoid the sort of like over masculine toughness that goes along with a lot of mascots. Like, I got a friend who thinks the Mariner Moose is a little bit too swole, and I see where he's coming from on that. And so, like, I would lean into more like just sort of cuteness and like, can they fire a t-shirt cannon?
Right, skills t-shirt cannon is definitely top skill. What do you think, Eula?
Okay, so I went to Franklin High School in Seattle, and I have been in the mascot costume. And so was I Benjamin Franklin bald with half bald with white hair and like a giant head once? Yes. And I do think the requirements for the job are just being willing to look a fool. I think that's really the only requirement to wanting to do the job, because you got to be open to just knowing you look stupid in there. From the inside out, you look stupid. I think from the outside in, you look great to these children. I have two other thoughts. One, I would love a group photo with all of these mascots so I could, one, know what they look like. I've never even heard of Doppler. I feel pretty terrible about that. And then the other thing is, when you said, Andrew, when you said like super masculine and go the opposite direction, and I'm thinking about the Kraken, isn't it like an octopus? Should our mascot just be Ursula?
Ooh, I love it.
Because that's very scary. Like Ursula's a very scary like character all around. And she's very feminine, but also, you know, dark. Dark.
I think Ursula is a great idea. I hope the Kraken are listening. We are going to leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Eula Scott Vino, podcaster and lifelong Central District resident and advocate, and Andrew Walsh, co-host of Too Beautiful to Live. Thanks, you two.
Thanks.
Thank you, Trish.
Thanks for joining us for Casual Friday. Caroline Chamberlain Gomez produced today's show. Matt Jorgensen does our theme music. Special thanks to WYPR's Out of the Blocks for audio in this episode. I'm Patricia Murphy. See you Monday.